wanna live freely. Why isn't it so easy? I should read a book, but I keep watching this TV. And I know this lifestyle doesn't really feed me. I just tune out to the voice inside the speaking.
2:30 to 4, Monday to Friday, is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he hops on every week, Ryan Burns. He covers the Gophers for Gopher Illustrated. You can find his work through that outlet at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, as always, your time is appreciated. The Gophers fell to Maryland 31-24 in their Big Ten opener over the weekend. Let's start with the offense. I have two possible solutions to one thing that's bugging me. Either mix in more jet sweeps and screens and less read options, or have Connor Rowe to carry the ball even just a tad bit more. Defenses, to me, they don't even view him as a threat in that read option, do they?
First of all, I just want to commend you on your bumper music. As someone who does a couple of radio spots every week, your bumper music is absolutely fantastic, and it's elite. The best I come on to each and every week. But you mentioned it. How does Minnesota attack the edge with Connor Rowe? And I hear Gopher, you know, social media people screaming at me during the games for Connor Rowe to keep. And folks, I hear you. I'm watching the same thing you are. I'm watching it from the press box and watching edge players not respect Minnesota. I'm watching Minnesota run inside zone into stacked boxes where that's not working. So what the theory is amongst Gopher media members right now is that Connor Rowe is being told not to keep. And that's because Minnesota has zero trust in their backup, Seth Green, because they don't believe he's anywhere near ready. So they're trying to mitigate that by not having Connor Rowe to take any additional hits so he stays healthy. And the one time that Connor Rowe did keep last week, unfortunately for Gopher fans, he got absolutely lit up. And he got a 15-yard personal foul penalty. That was almost a targeting call. So Minnesota's got to figure something out. Kirk Ciarrocca's game plan was very frustrating to watch because Minnesota just refused to kind of move the ball outside the edges. They didn't mix in jet sweep action. Not a jet sweep, just the action of it, like the threat of Minnesota trying to take it off the edge until 6 minutes left in the third quarter. Minnesota doesn't complete their first bubble screen until 6 minutes left in the game. And that's just doing no favors to either one of their running backs who have nowhere to run. Minnesota's running game is the second worst explosive running game out of 128 FBS teams. So they rank 127th out of 128 FBS teams in explosive plays from the run game. And that can't happen when you have two of the best five running backs in the Big Ten, in my opinion. So Kirk Ciarrocca's got to figure something out, because if you're not going to have your quarterback run, you're not doing any favors to this entire offense.
I take pride in that bump music and always appreciate that comment. I don't know what kind of bump music they play on WCCO, but PJ Fleck appeared on WCCO over the weekend, and he said, Ryan, that if they lost Connor Rowe to running the ball, that they would be in a tough spot. And I get it. I mean, kind of stating the obvious, the logic is there. But can you coach, and in Rhoda's case, can you play with that constant fear or thought of let's have him run less because we can't risk him getting hurt?
I mean, you can, but again, if you're not going to have your quarterback keep on read option, which is mind-boggling that you're just going to continue to try and run the read option, just kind of the action of it, because teams know that Connor Rowe is not going to keep the ball. That keep in the fourth quarter for Connor Rowe was the first time he's kept since Oregon State, so it had been 9 quarters since Connor Rowe had kept the ball. So if you're not going to have Connor Rowe keep, and that's where I kept trying to talk about there, is you have to find a way to get the ball outside the edges to make sure that teams, if they do put everybody in the box, that means there's nobody out on the edge. And that means if Rodney Smith or Shannon Brooks can turn the corner, well, then they should have a very, very pleasant experience out there running for a large gain. So Minnesota's got to work in end arounds. They have to work in jet sweeps, bubble screens. I mean, even some pin and pull action, because it is very frustrating to watch an offensive line, five guys, try and block six players, because it's not literally possible. There's always going to be one free man, especially, and that's, you know, it's the ideal scenario, only one guy. That's if every offensive lineman hits his block. So Minnesota's got to push the ball out to the edges. And the other big part about this is if teams are going to continue to stack the box, which they're going to be, they're going to have to hit on play action far more often. Because if there's seven or eight guys in the box, that means on the outside against Tyler Johnson or Phillip Howard or Brandon Lingan, it's one-on-one coverage. And all that has to happen Miss Connor Rota puts it on the money. Tyler Johnson goes up and get it. He makes a man miss, and he gets his third plus, you know, his third touchdown of 60-plus yards in the season. So play action is going to play a huge role in it as well, but they have to figure out the running game first and foremost.
Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated, our guest this afternoon here on the Blitz. Find his work, gopherillustrated.com. In the game specific to Maryland, I thought, and you've kind of alluded to it, outside of not viewing Connor Rota as a threat to run, they stacked the heck out of the box. And was it clear to you that their objective was, Connor Rota, you beat us with your arm. We aren't going to let Rodney and Shannon run all over us.
Correct, and that's going to be the game plan for every single Big Ten team the rest of the schedule, unless Minnesota can prove that the passing game is worth monitoring. And the tough thing for Minnesota is minutes or about an hour before the game, we got word that their second leading receiver on the season, Demetrius Douglas, a true freshman from out in Oregon. He's the son of Omar Douglas, a Gopher legacy, someone that Omar scored 5 touchdowns in a game against Purdue, coincidentally who Minnesota plays this upcoming weekend. I mean, he had 27% of the target share of this offense, of this passing offense. And for, again, for folks who don't know what that means, 27% of the time Connor Rota went back to pass, he was looking at Demetrius Douglas, and that's who he was throwing the ball to. To put that in perspective, that was the second highest on the team, right behind Tyler Johnson. So Minnesota had to figure out, well, who's going to fill that role? And so now that Philip Howard has stepped in, he led Minnesota in targets last week. That's going to be something to monitor. But this passing game has to get going. And for that to happen, it's going to have two things that are going to have to happen. Connor Rota is, number one, going to have to move off his first read. Because when I went back and I watched the tape from Maryland, there were far too many times where Connor Rota got immediately locked onto his initial primary receiver, and he missed guys wide open for big gains because he refused to move off his guy. And that's frustrating because with how well the offensive line is in pass protection, which, by the way, I mean, we're talking about a top 15 unit in the country in pass protection because Connor Rota has had forever to throw on all of these dropbacks. And that's really tough to do, especially on play action, but that's a credit to Ed Warner and this offensive line. But they're going to have Connor Rota move off his first read, and then when he does get on his first read, he's got to deliver an accurate throw because he missed a couple of touchdowns by throwing errant passes. So as Connor Rota goes, this passing offense is going to go because the nice thing about it is there are receivers that are actually open. And that's a culmination of Matt Simon and Kirk Ciarrocca allowing a wide receiver core to run more than 3 routes because the previous regime couldn't develop a wide receiver because they never asked them more than 3 routes, amongst other things. So I think Kirk Ciarrocca and Matt Simon are doing a great job with the receivers, but the quarterback's got to be on point there too as well.
On the flip side of the ball defensively, I mean, man, looking ahead, how decimated is that secondary with injuries right now, and where should the concern level be within all of that?
I'm very concerned. I am especially concerned knowing that Minnesota is now going to Purdue to face a Purdue team who, by the way, is a 4-point favorite right now. And that makes a ton of sense because Minnesota is missing 3 of their top defensive backs just from the Middle Tennessee State game from 2-3 weeks ago. And so you look at Duke McGee. He is still suspended, who is arguably Minnesota's best safety in the last 9 games. Antoine Winfield tweaked a hamstring. And it appears to be the same hamstring he was dealing with in fall camp, and that's not a good thing because anytime you re-injure a hamstring, it's usually going to be a longer prognosis and a longer timetable for recovery than the first time you strained it. So he is not expected to play this weekend. I mean, honestly, I don't expect him to play in October because, again, you need to get that thing right. And Minnesota actually, I think 2 years ago, dealt with the same thing with Demaryius Travis, who's now with the New England Patriots in safety. He continually kept messing up his hamstring, and eventually it just resulted in a medical redshirt. So Minnesota's missing Winfield, they're missing McGee, and they're missing Zoe Creighton. So what does that mean? That means that they're starting a true freshman now at safety in Kendarian Handy Hawley. And the worst part about it is, too, I feel bad for Antonio Chenault. Minnesota's starting corner on one side of the field is getting absolutely picked on. And I don't have the stats in front of me in terms of how many of the times that he's targeted that it ends up in a completion, it ends up in a first down or a touchdown. But you could see that the game plan for Maryland, once Antoine Winfield went down, was we're going to figure out where Antonio Chenault is going to line up. We're going to put our best receiver, DJ Moore, there, and we're going to continually throw at him. Well, that worked for Maryland because DJ Moore ended up with 8 for 90 and a score, including a couple of key third down conversions, one that they were able to get Antonio Chenault to commit pass interference, They scored a long touchdown on him. And again, I don't know how you can give help to your secondary, or especially a struggling corner, when you don't have a lot of experience back there. So you look ahead to Jeff Brohm and Purdue this weekend. It's going to be dicey. It looks like the weather forecast calls for 80 degrees and a little rain, and I hope it rains and I hope it pours, because I hope that passing game can't get on track for Purdue. But it's going to be dicey for Minnesota this weekend with the amount of injuries they're dealing with in the secondary.
You put light to Maryland's offense a little bit, and even with a third-string quarterback starting, I thought they found a rhythm, and they've got some legit playmakers on that offense, don't they? I kind of went in and out of their season opener against Texas as far as like watching and following along live, just because there were so many other games on, and I thought, yeah, they put up half a hundred on Texas, 60-plus on an FCS school. I thought it might have been a mirage, but they've got some guys that can just make you miss, don't they?
And that's a huge credit to their coaching staff. Two things I really want to note here are that I thought Maryland's game plan on the offense and defensive side of the ball was fantastic. And then the best part about it for them was they had a game plan, but they went out and executed it very well. Their game plan was they knew that Minnesota's strengths are in the interior of their defense. That means with their inside linebackers and their defensive tackles, and where Minnesota was weak was out in the boundary with their defensive ends and their corners. And so what they do all game, they tried to bounce it outside all game, and it had a lot of success for them. Now, Ty Johnson and Lorenzo Harrison, two backs for Maryland, I think they combined to go about 7-8 yards a carry for about 200 yards on the ground. And it's frustrating to say that in that same respect, because these are two very talented running backs. They made a lot of guys miss, but there were plenty of times where Minnesota would have them dead to rights behind the line of scrimmage, but then two guys wouldn't wrap up, two guys couldn't get the tackle for loss, and so instead of 2nd and 14, it was 2nd and 4 with how shifty and explosive those two guys are. And then DJ Moore as well. I mean, he was the best receiver Minnesota has faced to date. Now, again, we'll see how that faces against Purdue this weekend, but, I mean, that's a credit to Maryland in the recruiting rankings. Maryland has signed back-to-back top 30 classes in the recruiting rankings, and DJ Durkin at Maryland in year 3 now. I think Maryland has a better team top to bottom because they have more depth than Minnesota. And that's the biggest thing for Minnesota right now is the margin for error. With the amount of injuries that they're dealing with now, the one place where I said coming into the season they couldn't use any kind of injuries was their secondary, because they graduated 4-16. They had three expelled, including their top two corners, and now that they have three of their top six defensive backs from even 2 weeks ago injured and out, I mean, the margin for error for this team winning is razor thin. So there is a credit to Maryland, but Minnesota is really struggling with that depth aspect when you look forward.
Always enjoy his time on the program with us. He is Ryan Burns, covers the Gophers for Gopher Illustrated. Looking ahead on the road in West Lafayette at Purdue this Saturday, and we've kind of hinted at it a little bit here in this dialogue, in this segment. Purdue has a new look. They kind of, like Maryland, are much improved thus far this season. Even though they sit at 2-2, it's somewhat misleading considering they've played Louisville and played them really tight and hung in there with Michigan for a little while as well. Do you envision them trying to just shred that depleted Gopher secondary?
That would be my game plan, especially when you look at Minnesota's probably going to be birding a couple of more red shirts out there in the secondary, with probably Ray Estes along with Kendarian Handy Holly getting his first start. It's tough to imagine this game not shooting out if Minnesota's going to win, because the tough part for Minnesota is Rob Smith had a decision to make last week when Antoine Winfield went down, and that was, am I going to allocate my linebackers to helping my secondary or to helping my defensive line generate pressure? Well, he thought that the secondary was in worse shape, so he left the linebackers back in his own coverage, and he let the defensive line try and get pressure and get home, and the front four never did that. And that's very frustrating to watch, especially against the Maryland offensive line and pass protection that I didn't think was very good. So when you look at Purdue, I mean, the key is to try and get pressure on them, and how is Minnesota going to do that when they didn't do it against Maryland last week, especially because Rob Smith can't allocate his linebackers to the front four a lot of the time because they need all the help they can get in making sure that there's not a huge pass play being given up in the secondary. And for an example of this, folks, when Rob Smith did try and give some help to his defensive line, you saw that on the final touchdown of the game from Maryland, Minnesota sitting in cover zero, which means there's no safety in the middle of the field to help something if something goes wrong up the gut. So he has two receivers on each side. Minnesota's lined up directly across from them. They have seven in the box. Kamal Martin gets caught peeking on the outside of his linebacker position. Thomas Barber gets hands-on on the offensive lineman. And Ty Johnson just runs as quickly as he can, a 40-yard dash to the touchdown. So it's a double-edged sword for Rob Smith, but he just doesn't have a lot of options. And then you mentioned it, Purdue in that spread option with Jeff Brohm. I mean, they've been playing at such a high level that anybody that no one really thought they were going to in year one with Jeff Brohm. And I think the question is going to be at the end of the season, how long is Jeff Brohm at Purdue before he goes and takes a bigger and better job? Because there's only such a high ceiling you can achieve at Purdue, because it is Purdue, and you're not going to be able to win a lot in the recruiting rankings against some other schools. So Jeff Brohm has that program rolling, and it's going to be a tough test for Minnesota this weekend.
The Gophers opened as 2.5-point dogs. As of this morning, it's climbed to +4 at the outlet I kind of check on. So a lot of people are betting on the Boilermakers to take out the Gophers. Does that +4 line, the Gophers being 4-point underdogs, does it surprise you at all or no?
I thought it was going to be bigger. And just because of where Minnesota's offense is at and their reluctancy to figure out a way to get Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks into advantageous situations and space on offense, and then the status of their defense right now. Their linebackers, I think, are playing well, but that secondary is so banged up. And, again, that's the key matchup to note for Saturday is Purdue's passing offense is pretty freaking talented. And Minnesota's secondary is in shambles right now because of injury. So can Minnesota figure out a way to hide that secondary throughout an entire game? I don't know. But, again, if Minnesota's going to win this game, it's going to probably be a 31-28 kind of a day because they need to put up points on this Purdue defense who's going to be missing their top two leading tacklers for the first half because of targeting penalties against Michigan. So if Minnesota's going to put up points, it has to be in that first half. So they're going to have to get off to a hot start at West Lafayette.
Ryan Burns with us this afternoon. We'll finish up with a couple of points. What's the latest on the recruiting trail? How are the Gophers lining up in that department?
Well, the biggest thing that PJ is trying to do right now is land a stud quarterback or two. And Minnesota had Hank Bachmeyer in last weekend. For folks who don't know who Hank Bachmeyer is, he is the number 4 overall quarterback in the country for the 2019 class, which is the current junior class that's out at the high school level right now. Again, he has deep connections to Minnesota because he has family here. That was his first visit. I've heard a lot of optimistic things there, but they also just offered a quarterback from Kansas whose both of his parents went to the University of Minnesota. His name is Graham Mertz. I've seen him twice. I think he might be the best quarterback in the Midwest. Just a kid who's 6'4" with a gunslinger arm, and I mean, he can make some throws that make you swoon. So the ideal scenario for Minnesota here is they land both Graham Mertz and they land Hank Bachmeyer. So you have a national-level kid who's a top 150 overall kid, the number 4 quarterback in the country, and then if you can pair him with a legacy kid who's arguably the best quarterback in the Midwest, I mean, you can sell that to offensive linemen, your skill position guys saying, hey, look who we have committed to throw you the ball or to help make sure that you're not running into loaded boxes. Come play for me. Come row the boat. So if Minnesota is able to get that done here before the end of the season, I think that 2019 class could be pretty special, Mitch.
Yeah, sounds good. Finish with our picks like we normally do. You were 2-1 last week. You wanted to put a little asterisk by the USC pick, correct? Because their left tackle was out.
Yeah, and we get news like an hour before the game that stud left tackle guy is out with an undisclosed injury. It turns out it was like a skin infection, and he's in the hospital. So, man, I hope he's okay. But then, I mean, if you're talking to me that stud left tackle guy's out for a road start in a hostile environment in Washington State, I mean, come on now. But, I mean, also, I think we should note here, this is the same Washington State team that Minnesota absolutely lit up in the Holiday Bowl. Like, they shut down this team, and now we're talking about a 5-0 Washington State team that is heading into Oregon this weekend. So, I mean, that it just puts things in perspective for how good that win actually looks here about, you know, a year later for Minnesota.
First one on the slate for you to pick this weekend. It's actually tomorrow night. Number 17, Louisville at number 24, North Carolina State. Who do you like?
I was hoping you didn't pick this game because I have been going back and forth on this one all week because I think NC State is legit. I think they are for real. But the question is, can you contain Lamar Jackson? Lamar Jackson this season, you know, the Heisman candidate that he is, through five games, he's got 13 passing touchdowns for 1,600 yards, which is absurd. The even crazier thing is he's averaging almost 90 yards a game on the ground and also a rushing touchdown. So I'm going to go with NC State. I know that Louisville is favored, but again, I think Thursday night, hostile home environment for NC State. They're able to throw a lot of different looks at Mr. Lamar Jackson. They have a couple of very good pass rushers for NC State. I'm going to pick the home dog.
This next one intrigues me, and on paper, I think people might look at it and say, well, look at the state of the home team and the state of the away team, and it seems obvious, but I don't think it is. Plus, it's a rivalry game. You've got number 13 Miami, who's undefeated, at 1-2 Florida State.
Now, Florida State almost got beat by former defensive coordinator Jay Sovell last week at Wake Forest. They're down their starting quarterback. Their new quarterback now is James Blackman. But the thing you mentioned, and I think is the key part here, it is a rivalry game, and Florida State is at home. So you know that Florida State and their fans are going to get up for this game. Miami's a three-point road favorite. I just don't think that Florida State has the talent. Now, the biggest question that's going to determine this game is how disciplined is Miami? I think it's been this way for 30 years. Does disciplined Miami show up, or does we're going to be reckless and we're going to be, you know, the Miami from the 80s show up? I think disciplined Miami shows up, and Miami goes into Florida State and sends the Seminoles to 1-3.
Good luck picking this last one. We were talking about it off the air. It's kind of unfair for me to throw it your way, but number 11, Washington State at Oregon. No spread out on this game. Oregon still hasn't decided a quarterback. I'll let you hedge it if you think quarterback A is going to play, then go with that. Quarterback B, so on and so forth. But does it matter to you?
No, but the thing that has me so angry about this game is it is such a letdown spot for Washington State. And what I mean by that is they had this gigantic emotional home victory last weekend against USC. Now they have to head into Oregon. It's a night game at Oregon. And there's no line on this game because we don't know who the starting quarterback for Oregon is going to be, but that's fine for me. I just think that this is such a big letdown spot for Washington State where you could see like this game being 50-36 Oregon just because it's such a emotional just roller coaster, and that's the way that college football is with kids who are 18 to 22. My head tells me to take Washington State, and that's what I'm going to do. But man, I know that about 10 p.m. on Saturday night, I'm going to shoot you a text and be like, I should have gone with Oregon. But I'm going to go Washington State. But again, don't be surprised if the Ducks get their fifth win of the season.
So you've got North Carolina State over Louisville tomorrow, Miami over Florida State on the road, and you've got Washington State over Oregon. Those were the best slate of three games I've given you so far this year.
And you know how to pick them.
Yeah.
You do know how to pick them, my boy.
And two of them are ranked teams against non-ranked teams, yet I think they are trickier than what people would expect. Folks, go find his work at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, as always, we appreciate it.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you next week.
We're going to wrap things up on the show coming up next.